Hello, and thanks for watching, everyone. I'm Luke Gallen, and for our first Reinsurance News live video interview, I'm delighted to welcome James Vickers, Chairman of Reinsurance Broker Gallagher Re's International Division. James, it's great to see you, and thanks for sharing some time with me today.
Luke, delight to talk to you as always.
This interview takes place after another profitable year for reinsurers and just weeks after the key January renewals, which, according to Gallagher Re's first few reports, saw differentiated outcomes for clients. 2024 was also another year in which insured catastrophe losses exceeded $100 billion, and it's been an active start to this year with the destructive California wildfires. So today, with James's assistance, we're going to briefly look back at the 1/1 reinsurance renewals, how they position reinsurers for upcoming renewals and the year ahead. We'll explore the property and casualty markets and whether conditions are conducive to reinsurers meeting or exceeding their cost of capital once again this year. We'll also take a look at the alternative capital space on the back of a record 2024 for cat bond issuance. So, James, let's begin with an overview of the Jan renewals. Gallagher Re's 1/1 report highlights a range of outcomes for buyers across property and casualty markets, as well as stronger appetite from sellers. So, how does this position reinsurers for the rest of the year?
Well, it positions them reasonably well, but probably not as well as they would like to be, because what was clear at 1/1 was the demand from the buyers wasn't quite at the level that reinsurers might have hoped. And we're now getting into an imbalance of maybe a little bit too much supply and not enough demand. I think a lot of the reinsurers will have ended their 1/1 renewals reasonably happy with the terms and conditions that they achieved. Yes, there've been some rate reductions, but to be honest, they've been for programs that either warranted it by class or by territory, and a lot of them were springing off some very, very attractive pricing. So giving back a little bit on price was something I think most reinsurers don't want to do it, but they could accept. But on some of the more important aspects like deductibles and retentions, reinsurers managed pretty much to hold the line there. So I think that overall, yes, it's not quite such a stellar renewal for them as they enjoyed at 1/1/2024, but it's still a pretty good result in the circumstances. Where I think they will be less happy, though, is that all of the reinsurers after the two very good years and a substantial improvement in their capital position, all of them were leaning in and trying to expand. They see the market pricing as attractive. They've been talking to their investors and stakeholders about growth. And I think when they actually look at the growth numbers they've achieved, that will be a little bit of a dampener on their outlook. So the question for them for the rest of the year is, what can they do about increasing their premium volume or achieving their premium growth targets that they've got in 2025? Or are they going to have to row back from those a little bit and say, look, we're not going to chase the market down? So that is, I think, the real test that we're coming into. And we'll see that played out over the next big renewal seasons of 1/4, 1/6, and 1/7.
Yeah, great. And then just going on from what you said there about the growth opportunity. So we'll look at property specifically. Do you expect them to expand their books then further in 2025 after some strong growth last year?
I think they'd like to expand their books, particularly on property cat in most territories. I think property cat, at the level it's attaching and the pricing it's at, is seen as an attractive line of business. A lot of reinsurers would like to write a bit more. Concerns that we had in 23 about capacity in peak zones, such as the US windstorm, those have all dissipated. I think the question for reinsurers is on the property cat side, yes, we'd like to write more at the current pricing there or thereabouts, but where's the demand? The flip side is if we look at the property risk book, again, I think reinsurers are happy to expand in their property risk writing, but the challenge they've got there is much more one of underlying profitability and original underwriting. Because for most reinsurers, their property risk portfolios have not run very well for a number of years. And it's a sort of universal global problem. It's interesting. It's not like cat, which tends to be concentrated on one territory or another when there's some difficulties. Property risk is a difficult area. Doesn't mean that reinsurers wouldn't like to write it. It's a question of can they convince themselves that the deals being put in front of them are sensible and that they can actually make some money out of it.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And then going back to what you also commented on in your first response, terms and conditions, notably higher attachment points have arguably been more important for rate than reinsurers over the past 24 months or so. Do you foresee any changes here in the near to medium term, or is this kind of a new normal for the primary market?
I think reinsurers have learned their lesson well over the last 24 months that attachment point is the key. If you look at the sort of catastrophe events in 2024, there's been a huge number of small to medium-sized claims, particularly so-called non-peak claims, so flooding, hailstorm, severe convective storm. Reinsurers prior to 2023 were exposed to these, but by lifting up their retentions, they've largely stayed clear of them, which has been one of the keys, despite the fact 2024 is going to be overall a bad year for cat losses. We've estimated 154 billion of cat losses. The reality is reinsurers have not picked up much of it. So against that background, for them, attachment point is key. And sacrificing a little bit on pricing, maybe sacrificing a little bit on some of the other terms and conditions, that's relatively minor compared to the real prize, which is keeping attachment points at the level they're at.
Yeah, and I know brokers such as yourselves have been very focused on securing more aggregate or frequency loss protection for clients at these renewals, but how successful were those efforts in your view?
Well, I think they bifurcate into two different types of approach. One is what we loosely call structured reinsurance, sort of multi-year covers with some element of taking time into the calculation. Those are now well established. There's an active market in that. A number of reinsurers would like to write more of that business. And the question is really one of demand from clients, because it doesn't suit everybody, and it doesn't work for some people over a period of time. But that market is very active. So any buyer who's interested in some form of structured reinsurance, they're going to do very nicely. Of course, what people really want is what they had back, in 2021 and earlier years. They want straight in aggregate protection on a traditional basis, nothing structured on it about it at all. There, that's still very, very difficult. Having said that, there were some examples, and only a few, but some examples of reinsurers being prepared to write modest lines on aggregate covers for very much preferred clients, and I think also subject to some fairly heavy leverage against other business that they wanted to write. So it's not a completely dead market, but it's a long way away from where I think a lot of buyers would like to see it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay, so that's a nice overview of the property market. So if we could switch over to casualty, Gallagher Re's report notes an improving underlying market at the January renewals, but also that capacity was more constrained. So what should Re be focused on when it comes to, I suppose, specifically US casualty in 2025?
Well, I think the question that's been talked about for a number of years now is, although the original pricing has moved, terms and conditions have improved, line size has reduced, is the business being put on the books today actually capable of generating ultimately a profit for reinsurers? There's no doubt there's been some extraordinary changes in the front-end underwriting starting in probably 2020. But at the same time, the settlement patterns that are coming through in the later years are giving some cause for concern, and there are two schools of thought. One school of thought is saying because limits are reduced so much on the primary, a lot of claims are being settled a lot faster. Because insurers are less exposed, they've got smaller lines. So the book itself is shortening, the tail is getting shorter. There are other schools of thought that says, yes, that might be true, but social inflation is still raging. Nuclear awards are out there. And are these more recent years, which have benefited from this great improvement in original underwriting, are they actually going to be profitable? Now, you overlay on top of that reinsurers' different positions. Obviously, there's some reinsurers who were writing a lot of casualty back in what are turning out to be the difficult years of 2014, 2015 through to 2020. Now, they've got some challenges on their back years, which a number of them are remediating through reserve increases. But are these more recent years correctly reserved? And is there more as yet to come out of the woodwork? So it's interesting because property cat business, there's a number of sort of commercial, quite well-established models that provide a benchmark that most people work in and around. On casualty, there aren't these models and benchmarks. So it's very much down to individual underwriters' view of what is going on. So it's perhaps not surprising that there are variations. There's some people who are quite keen, think it's all right, happy to lean in. Others who are hesitating, watching, hesitating. I think as a class of business, US casualty is as a class that a lot of reinsurers would like to write. Don't think it's a lack of capacity on their part. It's a lack of confidence that the pricing is adequate and that they can be comfortable that they're going to actually make a long-term profit.
Yeah, it seems with property and casualty, discipline is prevailing, which is good. And I suppose in part because of that, over the last 2 years, reinsurers have produced some strong returns, and that's seen capital levels hit new heights. But where do you expect all of this to be deployed?
This is the question we're all asking. I mean, again, it was interesting at 1-1. Most of the capacity, in fact, virtually all the capacity increase came from incumbents who have, as you've rightly said, they've done very well. Their capital base has dramatically increased, and they want to put that capital to use. There were literally a handful of new startup companies. In fact, only one of them was reasonably active at 1-1. So the question for reinsurers, I think, is they've been giving a very good story to their investors. We're making money. We still can grow. Let's keep on going. The problem is that if you look at the big four European reinsurers, most of them are trading on the solvency basis miles outside their range. So that opens the whole subject of some form of capital return if you can't put that capital to use. So I think there will be a lot of trying in 2025 by reinsurers to show that they can make a decent return on what is now a greatly enhanced capital base. But maybe in the years to come, 26, 27, if that's less clear, it may be more difficult for reinsurers to justify hanging on to the same levels of capital they have at the moment if they're not able to utilize it.
Yeah, that's interesting, and it will be interesting to see what happens in the year ahead, if the years ahead, if the profits keep going like they are. So, a little bit of a crystal ball one here, but I'm going to try it anyway. Do you expect the reinsurance industry as a whole to meet its cost of capital again this year? And if yes, why? If no, why?
Well, assuming, I mean, cat has such a big influence on the overall profitability, assuming there are no major cats, I think the answer is they will for a number of reasons. First of all, investment income is very strong. Inflation is not dropping quite as fast as people thought. So that's holding interest rates up. If you look at the traditional reinsurer, most of them, non-life, they probably had their investment profile is probably 3 to 4 years. So you've still got investments that they were making back in 2019, 20, which are running off, and they're able to reinvest those at much more attractive rates of return, plus the new premium that they're putting on the books. So you've got a wall of investment income which will help prop them up, not just for 2025, but for a number of years to come. So there's that help on the background. I think that A lot of the reinsurers have increased their cat budgets, their nat cat budgets. Obviously, wildfires in California in January are not a great start to the year, but you know they've got bigger cat budgets, so that I think will bode them in good stead. And I think, to be honest, that the pricing, although it's coming off a little bit, it's nothing dramatic. If you look at the basic ROE calculation, I think the problem is going to be that the E part is, might grow a little bit faster. But so barring any major event that exceeds any catastrophe budgets, I think that most reinsurers are looking at a pretty reasonable 2025.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens this year, given the hectic start to the year for catastrophes. But obviously, we can never tell what's going to happen around the corner, where the wind's going to blow. So now we're going to switch gears to the alternative or third-party capital space. It was another record year for cat bond issuance, and there's interest growing again in the collateralized reinsurance sector. So what can we expect this year from this increasingly important component of the marketplace?
I think the thing to watch in this part of the market is the balance between investors putting their money into traditional cat bonds, ILS, and those looking at collateralized. The spreads on cat bonds have narrowed, and as the, you know, pricing on some of these cat risks begins to fall away, the returns may drop a little bit. And if we go back, you know, pre 21, 22, cat bond pricing had become fairly decoupled from the original pricing. It's now been completely in line with traditional pricing. However, if it drifts too far away, I think we might find investors preferring to move towards a collateralized approach and perhaps offering traditional incumbent reinsurers collateralized quota shares and actually writing the business that way rather than through a pure cat bond instrument. Yes, I think that the new capacity coming in will make it easier to innovate a bit in the ILS space. I mean, who would have thought there'd be cyber bonds a couple of years ago? They are now building up some momentum. You know, casualty bonds are beginning to appear. So the excess capacity coming in will help to drive that. But the heart of it is property cat and the pricing of property cat. The new lines of business coming in are extremely interesting, but they're not really moving the dial. Well, not at the moment, anyway.
That's interesting. It is going to be interesting to see if it's been 2 years in a row now with record cat bond issuance, and three in a row would be quite remarkable. So we'll see what happens there. And then finally, we're going to switch back to something you mentioned earlier, the insured nat cat losses. I think Gallagher Re's report recently, over 150 billion. I mean, over 100 billion in insured losses from catastrophe seems to be the new normal. And now secondary perils, flood, convective storm, wildfires, they're contributing more and more. So are reinsurers doing enough to assist the primary market as they navigate these losses? And also, what can we learn from the ongoing LA wildfires?
Well, I think reinsurers, they're trying to help. I mean, obviously by raising retentions and their attachment points, they're not helping so much in terms of providing risk transfer for some of these claims that the primary companies are bearing. But they are trying to make an effort. They are articulating and joining the primary companies in articulating some of the challenges and issues out there, which really, I think, relate to two, can split them into two. One is, you know, price coverage and deductibles, which is really sort of primary underwriting issue. And in some cases, I'm afraid, is getting so difficult, it's become an affordability issue. And then there's the other side of the equation, which is the risk mitigation, the building back better, improving risk management. And again, reinsurers are being very active in that space in terms of talking and supporting and providing some academic and technical research. But at the end of the day, it's down to the primary companies and actually their engagement with their policyholders, on the mitigation and the risk management. Now, reinsurers, whilst they're articulating this, they're also adjusting their capacity slightly. If we go to, I mentioned earlier on things like property per risk, original underwriting is crucial, and the enforcement of surveyors and recommendations, that doesn't happen. And I think, one of the most interesting things we're going to see coming out of the LA fires is how are people going to build back their properties? It was very noticeable. There was the lady who's the chair of the Getty Museum when everybody's getting worried that the fires were getting close. And she spoke about how the building is built, all marble on the outside, and their air conditioning systems and their sprinkler systems. And you would realize that if you've got the resources, you can build, you can live in these places, and you can survive these fires. The question is, what can the insurance industry do to persuade original policyholders to build back better? And how can we help those who sadly haven't got the resources? And I think this is going to be one of the unpleasant scandals that's going to come out of the LA fires is the number of people who have no insurance at all. Now, at the end of the day, I'm afraid that's a failure of the wider insurance industry as a whole. But I think that's going to be quite difficult. That, in one of the richest states in the richest country in the world, there's going to be a huge protection gap will become apparent. And how on earth that's going to be filled, who knows? But I've come back to the role of reinsurers. I think they can, and they do. They articulate, they support through academic research, and they support primary companies in their efforts. But at the end of the day, there's only so much they can do because at the heart of it is the connection between the original insurance company and the original policyholder and trying to persuade them to do the right thing and or to find a way to accept the terms and conditions and the premium pricing that's being put out for the risk.
No, it makes sense. And clearly, there's lots of work to do, but it's an opportunity for the primary market and the reinsurers, you'd think, to close this protection gap.
Yeah, I think all we have to be careful about is that in these extreme circumstances, people tend to rush to governments and look for public-private solutions. And we'll be very careful not to crowd out the private insurance market because with the right actions, these risks are insurable at a reasonable price. But it does take everybody to get involved in trying to solve the problem and not just trying to dump it on one particular sector.
Yeah, well said. So, James, before we end, any closing comments from you?
No, I think that we're at an interesting point of the market cycle. As I said earlier, I think reinsurers are reasonably comfortable with this 1-1 renewal. The question is more the outlook, and the question is more one of demand. And as inflation rates fall, particularly in Western Europe and US, quite a lot of growth was driven by inflation. As that falls back to the norm, how can the industry grow at above a normal GDP growth rate? That's going to be the interesting thing to watch in the next couple of years.
That's great. Thanks, James. And thanks again for joining me and providing such valuable insights today.
Delighted as always, Luke. Thank you for having me.
And thanks, everyone, for watching. Until next time.